been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. Welcome to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, broadcasting live. We're at the Chamber of Commerce today. Before we get started, I'd like to give a special shout out to Royce Brooks, JJ Holly for inviting us here to their beautiful new lovely facilities. How's it look, guys, looking out over the lake?
That's wonderful. I'd like to have an office here.
Yeah, my office actually happens to be right across the lake, looking the other direction, but it's beautiful.
Were you the guy canoeing over?
That wasn't me. I would have liked to have done that, but I had to get here a little quicker than that.
We have a great show for you today. I'm your host, Daniel Goodwin, and joining me is our special guest today, Brett Strong. His company is called The Strong Firm. They are a boutique Woodlands law firm. They have six attorneys there. He's also an entrepreneur, and he's a mentor to an entrepreneurship degree program. We're going to learn a lot about that, but also we're going to learn about some of the life lessons and things that he's learned from counseling various business owners, and he's seen some success traits and some things that maybe business owners need to watch out for. My co-host today is Tom Glover. And Tom, I've often described you as a fractional COO because you had big Fortune 500 company operation sort of experience. Then you went out as a consultant, consulting small business owners. Yep. Yeah, lots of different things. And then some company just snagged you full time, right?
Well, I had, as I mentioned earlier, decided to leave my corporate career and go into consulting. And I said to my wife, the only thing that'll drag me back out of that is joining a startup. And that's what happened. I met a small firm that had something really cool and I wanted to jump on board. So I'm transitioning back out of consulting and back into a job with a small startup.
Yeah, and you've actually worked with some of our clients, helping them get business started, businesses started and up off the ground and running and operational. So we're excited to have you back on the show here today. And also, I'd like to give a shout out to the Sam Houston State Entrepreneurship Degree Program, specifically Chip Matthews, Jamie Collins, and Dr. John Newbold, and then I guess the who had a lot of the vision to start this program was the dean of the College of Business there, Mitchell Museum. And so we're excited to be working alongside Sam Houston State University. I'd like to share with you guys just a kind of a neat little tidbit from one of our shows that we just had. My co-host was Dr. John Newbold of the College of Business there, and he brought a student with him, a young man named Blaine Lynn. And in the interview, or after the interview, Blaine said he had this idea for a business, and his idea had to do with launching an app, and he wanted to know what I knew about that. Well, I don't know anything about the app business, but I have a friend, Mark Bergsrud, been friends with him for 20 years. He was an executive at United Airlines, and then he took a retirement package, and he went entrepreneur and got this little called. You ever heard this app called Grab?
And I have not.
It maps out all of where everything is in every airport, in the United States. So for business travelers, I've been in a lot of these different airports, but I don't know where everything is, And so it's how to have, maybe you're on a 2-hour layover, you got access to everything. But anyway, so those two have got getting connected and sharing some knowledge and understanding, some wisdom about that. So that's kind of one of the good things that a good example of the Shrimp Tank, where the rubber is meeting the road with some students, actually. And so, guys, we all set up our place of business right here in the Woodlands. And earlier, Royce Brooks was commenting about the overall economy here in the Woodlands. And I know that your finger is on the pulse of that, Brett, very closely. Tell us what's some of the better reasons for someone who wanted to start a new business to do it right here in the Woodlands.
Well, my background, I've been in the Woodlands since 1989. So I've seen us go from basically a bedroom community where there was no business here. There was not a restaurant here to what we really have as a regional economic center here. And so there's just a lot going on here, regardless of what it is you are trying to do. You talk about people who are building apps, all the way to people who are supporting Fortune 500 oil companies. This is the place where things are happening. Even when we saw the energy industry in the last couple of years take a little bit of a downturn, medical, commercial real estate, grocery chains that are here, restaurants, they have all boomed. And it has really created an atmosphere where if you're entrepreneurial, if you want to try to launch a business, this is the place to be, one of the top markets in the world, if you look at the growth we've had.
So not to go off on a tangent here, but what's the reason why that has happened? Why has the Woodlands been so successful? I've seen it grow, too, from 90 when I came out here to what it is today. And it's an example nationwide of what a lot of communities want to grow into.
I'll attribute it to a handful of things and start with the investment of the developer in this community. I mean, you've got George Mitchell and the Woodlands Development Company, which is now a part of Howard Hughes. They have invested a large amount of money in infrastructure, in amenities. You look at the Cynthia Mitchell Pavilion. You look at the Marriott and the Convention Center. Those were built before there was really the
market
the market
yeah.
form. So there was that investment, the Woodlands Waterway. So I would say that, the underlying investment. The other thing I would say is that the diversification of this place. That we have Fortune 500 corporate international offices here. When you look at an Anadarko or ExxonMobil just
right.
south of here.
Yep.
But small companies who were startups in various industries came here because they wanted to work, live, and play close to where it is their family was being raised. And that has created a resilience, I think, that you don't see in a lot of places. When you have corporate headquarters and that corporate headquarters leaves or has a bad downturn, look at the medical here. We now have four of the largest hospital providers or medical providers in the greater Houston area here. Memorial Hermann, St. Luke's, Methodist, and Texas Children's, all four here with major yeah. facilities. Those are mega machines on a global basis.
They are.
And so you look at all of that together. My short answer is the investment as well as the diversification in all sorts of industries and job types really has made this place recession-proof for the most part, as well as so diverse that that people want to be here.
So I'd like to read just a little bit about your bio.
Sure.
Okay, before we go into the deep dive about your journey as an entrepreneur. But Brett Strong's the founder and managing shareholder of the Strong Group. Brett Strong has been a resident and active community leader in the Woodlands for over 25 years. You received your JD law degree from South Texas College of Law, and that was after earning your bachelor's degree in finance from the University of Colorado in Boulder. You spent 11 years with Shell in the areas of contracting, finance, information service prior to becoming licensed in the legal field and establishing your practice here in the Woodlands. Brett and his firm represent local and regional business owners and organizations in the area of real estate, mergers and acquisitions, sales, business law, contracts, corporations, LLCs, partnerships, trusts, estate planning. Wow, you guys cover a lot of ground there. Business disputes, commercial disputes, lending, and borrowing. Now, your resume is too long to read because you're very active in the community here. And in fact, they were telling me that you've been chairman of the chamber.
That's correct. I was chairman of the chamber in, I think, 96 and 97, if I remember right. But yeah, past chairman.
School board. It goes on and on. YMCA, you've really immersed and plugged yourself into the community. You've seen businesses come and you've seen businesses go. And so...
So when do you sleep, I guess?
Well, that's very flattering. But our approach and my approach has always been in this community from the very beginning in the late 80s when I moved here, is that this is a community that if you get involved and if you really connect, that you can succeed. And the community was built around that. I mean, schools are next to churches and synagogues and mosques. And so really, the idea here was get involved, build relationships, and over the long term, that's going to help you. And that applies to not just the legal business. That implies to anybody who's wanting to build a business and build relationships.
Good advice for an entrepreneur is build relationships.
That's exactly right. I tell my young attorneys that you may not know everything when you come out of law school. In fact, you know very little. If you can build trusted relationships over the years, those people will come back to you when it is they have a problem. And that legal problem may be something you can handle, maybe something that someone else in our firm can handle, or someone you know can handle. But it all starts with a trusted relationship. I agree with you.
It's interesting you'd say that because even in the corporate environment that I came with, being a trusted advisor was key. Whether you're a small company, a consultant, or you're working in a large enterprise, relationships and being somebody that can be a sounding board, that's huge.
So I'd like to ask both of you to comment. You know, we know there's some statistics that say that 50% of the businesses don't make it past the first 5 years. And what has been some of your observations of those that make it and those that don't?
I will tell you, from my perspective, hard work is key. And I always tell people that I consult with, we have people come in our doors every day who have ideas, great ideas a lot of times, not so great ideas a lot of times. But nothing replaces hard work to start with. Now, the other things take some doing. That is financing. You know, I mean, a lot of people have great ideas and no money or no resources. Sometimes the idea's not so great, and if it's not so great, you got to be able to get people off of that and on to something else. When you talk about what I've seen that succeeds and what doesn't succeed here in the Woodlands, I will tell you if it's centered around something unique that is catchy and seems to catch the eye and the interest of the local community, those ideas tend to work well. Things around families and children, I will just tell you, those are home runs here usually. As simple as swim lessons to sports franchises and things like that. You have to look at the market you're in and what you're trying to succeed. You have to be able to find a place for funds, and you have to have a good idea. That's what I see succeed. I know you've had recently on your program Kerry Atar from Fieldings. Kerry's a good example, that came to this area with really good, unique ideas about how to provide a service through a restaurant to his clientele, and he's done well because of it. So it's a good example.
So one of the things that I was wondering when I was prepping to talk to you today, for small companies, everybody, you know, they do a few things right, they do a few things wrong. So I wanted to know what your experience, what are the most common legal mistakes from a legal standpoint?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
And I will tell you the number one legal mistake we see, and this is by far above and beyond any others, and that is if you have more than one person involved in your business, and most people do, either it's an idea person and a money person. Very few people come to us with all the money they have and an idea that's perfect. Usually it's two or three people. Two, three, four, five. One guy has money. One guy has a great idea. Another guy's very good at operations. Another guy's good at finance. Those are great partnerships, and we like seeing those. But the number one mistake we see is not having an agreement up front that deals with when things go bad. And I will tell you,
A partnership agreement.
Exactly. A partnership agreement, a shareholders agreement, or a buy-sell. Things that say, okay, everybody's very good friends, and everything goes well when you hit the ball out of the park. But when you strike out and you've got to change directions, or the direction of the various partners go different ways, and it's just part of life, life cycles and everything else, you better have thought about those things before they happen.
So you're talking about like exit strategies or decision-making strategies?
All the way from buy-sells. In other words, what a buy-sell is that we understand if this guy wants out, how do we get him out? Or if we want this guy out, how do we get him out? How do we price his equity? How do we do that in a way that isn't going to cash bankrupt the company? And how is that done in an agreed upon, organized manner before the tables are not equal anymore? Because when these things happen, usually you're at a point that's different than you were when you started.
Right. You're not happy anymore. You're not friendly.
You're not happy. Yeah. You're not friendly. And we see all sides of this. We see people who do it very well up front and then run into these problems. And in most cases, that works very well. We see people who come to us after the fact and say, here, I can't stand this guy that's across the table from me, and we want a divorce, and we have no idea how we're going to do it.
God,
and
I wish I'd have met you 15 years ago. I lived exactly prenuptial. What he's talking about.
Business prenuptial.
It's exactly what it is. It's a business prenuptial agreement. That's a great way to describe it. And things happen, not only just disagreements, death, divorce, disabilities. I call them the big D's. Those are the things that we run across. Is you know, someone has a life circumstance where they're getting a divorce. Well, in Texas, it's community property state. Your spouse owns half of what you create during your marriage. And so you are, in fact, in a partnership with a spouse of whoever it is you're in partnership with. And if you don't have an agreement with that person and their spouse as to how that's going to happen, you can end up in a partnership with somebody who you really hadn't anticipated that happening.
That's great counsel. So here's how I would translate what you're saying is that if you're an entrepreneur, you may have this passion burning in your heart about this, you know, big hill you're going to go climb, this big accomplishment, this company that you're going to build. But what I hear you saying, Brett, is that sit down and get a blueprint first, get a design, get a foundation to build this company on, because, and don't go cheap on it. You know, you could probably go to LegalZoom for $10 and get some kind of knockoff document that everybody just puts their name in, but if you're really going to do something that is significant, then you should get, I believe, some good counsel.
I agree completely. And the earlier the better, especially, as I said, if there are two people involved. One of the things I'm sure you see, both of you in the businesses you've been involved in, is if there's equity money coming in, either private equity or even relatives or friends and family, there's expectations with that money. And you better have an understanding as to how that's going to work when you go into this from the very beginning. Because if you don't, surely if you haven't agreed on expectations, you're never going to meet the expectations of anyone. And so someone's going to get their feelings hurt or going to be irritated with it. There are very few companies we know that don't hit a bump in the road somewhere.
And I was going to say, if you're going to raise capital, you better have these documents and things in place, or you'll scare people off. They'll say, "Well, you don't know what you're doing. You're winging it."
The key takeaway I'm getting here is that you can't think about how it is in the beginning when everything's hunky dory. You got to think about the worst case scenario when things go south.
Unfortunately, that is our job as attorneys, is often to explain what could go wrong. We're risk managers and problem solvers. That's what we do. So we need to help people identify and minimize risk. And that's really what this is. It may not ever happen. And we tell people all the time, boy, we hope we never have to deal with any of these situations. But when they do happen, you want to be prepared.
You're listening to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, where we interview Houston's best and brightest entrepreneurs. We're here in the studio today with Brett Strong with the Strong Firm and Tom Glover, my co-host. Don't forget, you're going to be able to download a complete replay of Brett's interview at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. His show will also be available on iTunes. So that's great advice. We talked about some things that make a business succeed. That's having a unique business idea, and then hard work and financing. All of these are certainly important. And you mentioned about Carrie, and one of the common threads seems to be passion. I would just throw that into the mix, that the interviews that we have where the business owners have reached a level of success, these have been some passionate, driven people about their purpose.
You got to love what you're doing.
You got to have that passion, but man, you better really build it on a good foundation and have expectation of these events, right?
No doubt. And I agree. I couldn't agree with you more about passion. The people who come into our office and are passionate about what it is they're doing, that is, I talk about hard work, but that's half the battle, because if you've got to work hard, you better like what you're doing.
Right.
As you said, Tom, it is really, if you're miserable, and I tell my attorneys this, if you're miserable doing this, you're in the wrong place, because you really ought to have fun doing this, because I don't want you in here miserable 8 hours a day and coming back tomorrow morning with the same attitude.
So one quick question. I know we got to do a commercial in a second, but you said earlier, and you just repeated about hard work. Does that mean long hours, hard hours?
It doesn't necessarily mean that, although there are times when you have to dedicate yourself to getting past a goal. But really, people ought to work to try to make the hours minimal. I mean, so right. If you put the right people in place, I mean, that's what I've been able to do with my law firm. I mean, in the beginning, you had to work hard. You had to be there because you were the one that was going to pick up the phone. But at some point, surrounding yourself with good people, people who know what they're doing and who can answer those questions and solve the problems of everyone else and carry the baton for you, it doesn't have to mean you're working 18 hours a day. It just means you work right. And you do the right things and you focus on the things that are important to, for your business to succeed.
Build a good team and then empower them, and you don't have to work those 18-hour days.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I think work-life balance is often, you know, put to the back burner, and that's always a concern for me.
Well, I will tell you, at my firm, that is one thing, and we can talk about it more after the break if you'd like, but that is paramount in our culture, is that you will have work-life balance. And I've tried to do that in my own life, and I've told my attorneys, you really need to be able to work hard when you're here, but boy, you got to get your mind off of this and in a place where you can think about bigger things.
That's a really enlightened view. That's nice to hear.
We'll talk a little bit more about that when we get right back. We're going to go to a commercial break. We'll be back in 30 seconds with our guest, Brett Strong, with The Strong Firm. You're listening to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, the radio show for entrepreneurs. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
For unparalleled expert legal representation, strength is in your corner with The Strong Firm. From business law, commercial litigation, and oil and gas and energy to real estate, mediation, and estate planning, we have your legal services covered. Founded in 2004 by Brett Strong, The Strong Firm has 6 attorneys and is located in the Woodlands at Hughes Landing. Discover strength in knowledge, strength in results, and strength in community. Visit www.thestrongfirm.com or call 281-367-1222.
And we are back live with the Shrimp Tank Podcast, broadcasting from the Chamber of Commerce today. Don't forget, you're going to be able to download a complete replay of Brett Strong's show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. I'm your host with my special co-host today, Mr. Tom Glover. So before we went to that commercial, actually the commercial break about the firm, Brett, is it yourself and 5 or 6 other attorneys?
Yeah, it's myself and 5 other attorneys, and a staff of about 14 people. Yeah.
So tell us, what is your specific role? You're the founder of the company. What's your role now that you've built this organization?
That's a great point. I mean, as I said earlier, when I first started, it was me and a law clerk and a receptionist, and my role was everything, as you can imagine, changing toilet paper all the way to answering questions for Fortune 500 companies. You know, my background is very well set. I've been in the oil and gas industry for 30 plus years. So most of what I do now is focused on larger transactions in that sector. We do, as the commercial mentioned, and you mentioned in the introduction, we handle a lot of commercial real estate. I do some work in that area. We handle a lot of what I consider to be basic corporate law for bigger transactions, more complicated. I'm involved in that. But I have surrounded myself with a great group of folks that have expertise in all these areas. So if you were to come to our firm and say, listen, Brett, I have a problem in X. I want to acquire a building. I want to acquire a piece of land and build a building, I'm going to send you to Winnie Lambie, who's our real estate expert. If you have a merger and acquisition, I'm going to send you to Eric Thurgood, who does that sort of thing for us. If you have in a dispute, Laura Dumas, who tends to handle a lot of our dispute matters. So each of our attorneys have an area they're deep in, but everybody knows what we do well. So everybody knows how to do those things. So my role at this point is really managing those resources, making sure that the clients get to the right person. And that, and managing the firm. I mean, and that is the one thing for those lawyers who are entrepreneurs or are listening. They don't teach you how to run a law firm in law school. You get to learn that on your own. Luckily, my degree is in business finance. I've got a little background in that area. But I spend a lot of my time actually managing the business of the firm, which includes marketing plans and business plans.
I was going to ask you about marketing. So do you have to constantly worry about a pipeline for a new business?
Boy, more in a service business, as you know, you've been a consultant. That is what I spend probably, I'd say, more than half of my time looking at. We have a written business plan we generate every year, and it's very specific to the firm's goals, our dollar expenditures, and individual goals for everybody at the firm, all the way down to the receptionist. I mean, what is her role in making sure that we continue to retain and land business? It is very important, and that's one thing I beat my chest a little bit here, is we are a little bit unique as a law firm in the amount of business development and marketing we do. Most law firms can get a little stodgy in that area, and they really don't realize that this is a business and an entrepreneurial business, and you have to stay on top of it. You have to market. You have to have an image, a brand image, and everything else. So we spend a lot of time with that.
So in the past, when I've been on shows with Dan, we've talked about the fact that entrepreneurs usually have some really brilliant ideas. They have a cool product, or they have some technology. They're really weak in sales and marketing, and often weak in the commercial side as well. So have you been able to learn those skills on the fly, or...
My background is, I think, was mentioned in the beginning. I was with Shell Oil. I was hired right out of the University of Colorado in Boulder with my degree in finance by Shell Oil Company. And they sent me various places over 11 years, and I was handling contracts for them throughout. But I always had that entrepreneurial kind of drive, both internally with Shell and just trying to get into the businesses I was in. And I got placed in a couple of positions at Shell on entrepreneurial kind of segments of business where they wanted somebody who had those skills. So I think I had them all along. But that was one of the reasons why I left Shell, was that I wanted to be in an entrepreneurial place where I could be the master of my own destiny.
Yeah, I was just going to say, control your own destiny.
And so that's why I took the leap in 96 to begin practicing law here in the Woodlands. And so I feel like I've always had those pent-up desires and skills, and was able to place them in marketing and developing a business here in the Woodlands that just happens to be a law firm.
So, Brett, you've built a nice law firm, and it sounds like that there's a culture within that company that you're looking to cultivate. And could you speak to that just a little bit?
I'd love to, because for those of you starting companies, or you've started a company and you're trying to grow it, culture, even more than I realized and I've learned over the last decade of running a law firm, is paramount. Especially with millennials, I will tell you, and those students who are listening out there, I know culture is important. And so we have learned to be able to tell people, if you come practice law here in the Woodlands, you're going to be a part of the community with our firm. You're going to be plugged into networks of people like you. You're not going to be shoved in a back room and thrown legal documents. You're going to be expected to build relationships and be a part of the community. And then also you're expected, as I said earlier, to have a life balance. We're all about family. And if you have a family or relationships, you need to be able to foster those relationships and make sure that you do the things that are important to have those relationships work, and have interests outside of practicing law, because mm-hmm. that really makes life fun. If you're not enjoying life, you really have troubles, I think, having fun doing what it is you do to earn a living. Shoot, if we could all do what it is we want to do and have all the money we wanted, we'd do what we want to do. Unfortunately, we have to create money to feed our families and put a roof over our heads. So you really ought to be happy doing it. So that's the culture we try to create.
Brett's throwing out a lot of nuggets here today.
Very, very, very good. And what I hear is leadership. And because if you're the leader of the firm, and people see what you do more than hearing what you say, and having a heart for service like you have in the community, I'm sure that some of your people in your organization pick up on that. And that's part of the culture, I would think, too, within your company.
It is. We not only through our dollars, because we sponsor a lot of events here locally and are involved in a lot of charities and give of our money, both the firm money and individually the people who work there. But I tell all of our attorneys, you need to be involved, and you need to be involved in something you have a passion about. You mentioned passion earlier as a part of an entrepreneurial attitude. I don't want you going out and being a member of the Woodlands Chamber of Commerce Young Professionals Group and hate it. The people that ought to be a part of that group are people who like being around young entrepreneurial people. If your passion is dogs, go be on the SPCA board. Or if your passion is running, go be a part of the Woodlands Running Club.
Speaking of that, we had Bob Milner on.
Yes.
And we interviewed him at the Mercedes dealership. And he's got a big passion for, and he's doing a big, mighty work in this, rescue shelter animals. And for he and his wife, that's just a strong area of passion for them.
Yeah. And so my guidance, and you talked about leadership in this area, my guidance to everybody is get involved, but get involved something that you have a passion for. And that will build relationships. Once again, as we talked about, it'll show people that you have a heart, that you want to support this community, and that in and of itself will show people that you're the person they want to go to when they have a problem. We're problem solvers, so people don't have a lawyer issue every day. But when they wake up with one, we want them to come to us.
Right. So how about some advice that you may think of that just comes to mind, that if you were speaking to a young, maybe a millennial, a young aspiring entrepreneur, and they have not yet found either the confidence or the validation to go out and take that first step, what advice would you give them?
Well, we talk with a lot of young entrepreneurs who have a lot of ideas, and all the way from people who have great ideas, as I said, and some maybe not so good, but they've got a passion for what it is they're trying to do. And as I said earlier, my advice always is you got to work at it. You know, you got to, in the beginning, you're going to have to figure out the way. You're going to make some mistakes, and don't. I had lunch actually yesterday with a young man who's 30 years old. He opened a business here in the Woodlands that was a personal training business, very, very knowledgeable in certain areas, but was discouraged with you know, things not happening the way he thought that they should happen. And I told him, listen, here, you've got to focus on the things you do well and focus on things that differentiate you. And so my advice is, it's easy to get down when you have problems. It's easy to get down when you run up against a wall. But really reevaluate what it is that you differentiates you, makes you different. Focus on those things, work on those things, and get those out in front of people. And it'll happen for you.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to get a little bit technical for a second. We haven't talked too much about actual legal related items here, but a little bit.
Well, he is a subject matter expert, so we could delve into the legal.
Well, we could have a 2-hour show here if we wanted to. But so a little bit of a self-serving question, since I'm joining a startup. When somebody starts a small company, usually they start it as an LLC or an S-Corp or something like that. What are the signs to transition into a corporation?
Well, most entrepreneurs, when they come to me, there's two reasons why you want to create an entity, and one is liability protection, is basically it. The other is tax. I mean, those are your big two issues, mm-hmm. and so that's where you start. As those issues get more complicated from the standpoint, so for example, if you start as an LLC and you choose to be taxed as a S-Corp, and I'm probably getting into more technical stuff than we really need to, but you make certain decisions when you're just starting out based on your structure and your need for flexibility is the best thing. Well, once you get to a certain point where you're going to go public, you're going to be listed on exchanges, the possibilities start to narrow just because of the tax laws, Securities Exchange Commission laws, and regulations that move you toward a corporation and what they call a C-Corp, that sort of thing. But I always tell people early on, there's no reason to worry about that. We can solve that problem later on. If you've got a successful business and you've got money coming in and you want to go public, we'll solve your corporate problems. You don't worry about that early in the process.
Yeah, I'd like to say something about that, because sometimes, you know, people start a business 10 years earlier and maybe you know, maybe a certain entity structure was appropriate for them. And then 10 years go by, they get much more successful. And you say, you know, hey, why are you an S-Corp? Why are you a C-Corp? And they say, well, I don't know. The accountant set it up that way. They don't really know why they are. And sometimes as these companies grow and come along, they may have the need for maybe a C-Corp and an S-Corp, because each one of them have different, aspects. The C-Corp being the taxable corporation, but it's only taxed at 15% up to the first $50,000, correct?
That is correct. And we all know tax reform is coming. I mean, they're dealing in Washington right now with the healthcare situation, but I was listening to Paul Ryan before I came over here. He said the next thing we're tackling is tax reform. So I think, based on at least the plans that are being laid out, and our local congressman, Kevin Brady, is the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee here. I've talked with him about this very topic. We are heading towards a situation where I think corporation taxes are going down significantly. And so your structure that you had in 2016 may not be the structure you want to have in 2017.
Good point. And that's, just like maybe you need to pull your will off the shelf and go visit with your estate planning attorney, get your will looked at every 5 years. If you're a business owner, you might need to get your corporate structure examined from both a asset protection or a, what is it, a liability, but a from a taxation standpoint. And with that, on the topic of tax, we're going to go to a commercial break. Producer says that we will be right back. You're listening to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, broadcasting to you live today from the Woodlands, Greater Woodlands Area Chamber of Commerce. We'll be right back. According to a recent Forbes business article, 9 out of 10 business owners are overpaying their taxes. Ouch! Contact the team at Provident and explore how you can pay only what you are legally, morally, and ethically required to pay. After a simple 15-minute no-obligation assessment, we'll determine if we could substantially reduce your tax burden, and if so, we'll develop a tax savings plan using our exclusive tax blueprint. Visit us online at ProvidentWealthLLC.com or the office 281-466-4843. And we're back with Brett Strong, Tom Glover, and our show today is focusing on entrepreneurship and, in particular, Brett's story and his journey as an entrepreneur. We're doing a little bit of a deep dive. We talked about culture. We talked about passion. We talked about community and leadership here and why some businesses make it and why some don't. And so I know Tom and I have some more questions for you. I wanted to ask about a business plan. Do you run your own business on a business plan?
I do, and I created a business plan. I still have it sitting in my drawer, and I pull it out, honestly, about every year, and I say, what did I get right and what did I get wrong? What did I predict would happen that didn't happen, and what did happen? And it is a tool everybody should do in the beginning. First of all, if you're going to get any financing, they're going to want it. Second of all, it is a exercise everyone should go through because you have to ask the hard questions. Then the
That's
other thing
exactly
I would say,
what I was going to say, sorry to interrupt you. Yeah. The process is just as important as the result.
Well, and the process, and then share it with others that you trust. Obviously, when you have a business plan, especially if it is a confidential idea or something that is just a sidelight. If you have an idea that's a good idea and no one else has done it, please protect that from a confidentiality perspective, and we could do a whole show on that. But have someone you trust look at your business plan that has been through it before, that's an entrepreneurial, and have them ask the hard questions, because the last thing you want to do is be sitting in front of a banker saying, I need to borrow $500,000, and them saying, well, this doesn't make any sense to me. Or your plan is lacking here. So yes, business plans are critical in the beginning, and then pull the thing out every so often and look at what you've done and how that needs to be tweaked. And you need to have an ongoing operation plan. As I said, a marketing plan that puts you out 3, 4, 5 years. What am I going to look like 5 years from now?
Good, a really good point. And you know what? You talked about your bankers, and I've found a good commercial banker to be a very astute and wise business counselor. In fact, we did an interview, a commercial banking episode live in the classroom at the university, and Ray Sanders, who teaches a commercial banking at Sam Houston State, made a lot of really great points about what a business metrics set of metrics should look like. Believe me, these guys know how to look at a business plan. Oftentimes, the banker or the attorney understands the entrepreneur's business much better than the entrepreneur does. Now, Tom, I know you've got a big level of expertise in building business plans, and business plans can mean different things to different people. I mean, I've seen people just have a set of goals down and they call it a business plan. That's not really a business plan. Could you maybe comment a little bit about some of the components of a well-conceived business plan?
So when I think of a robust business plan, I think beyond just the financials. You know, a lot of people put a P&L together and try to predict the future with just the numbers, and that's that. I think it's important to look at the competitive environment, do a market analysis, have an operations plan, roles and responsibilities. We talked about that earlier, where if you've got partners, who's got the decision-making authority, what are the job details or requirements for each person so everyone knows what their role is. Growth plans, just, you know, there's you can make a business plan an inch thick stack of papers, but I think The financials are kind of the minimum, but you've got to understand your market. You got to understand your whole marketing machine, what your budgets are going to be, and so forth. We could spend
a
show.
It's multifaceted. We did a show.
There's a lot of pieces to it.
Yeah, right.
Well, your point on knowing your market is critical in our business. You know, we came into this knowing we were going to be the business law firm here in the Woodlands. We weren't going to be the business law firm in Houston. We were going to be the business law firm in Chicago. We knew this market. We knew what this market needed, and we focused our plan around that. So I could have put together a financial plan and said, I'm going to generate X million dollars worth of revenue. But that was probably the most critical part of our plan, was knowing who the competitors were, what this market looked like and what they needed, and making sure that that plan fit this market.
You said earlier a key word, differentiation. That is muy importante. I mean, you have to know how to distinguish yourself from, because there's a lot of people that are doing very similar things. You got to be able to separate yourself from the masses.
Brett, you talked a little bit about the early years of starting your business when you answered the phone and you took out, changed the toilet paper and all of that. What are some things that you could think of that maybe you learned in the first few years of your business that would be helpful to another business owner today?
Well, I think I would say this is that when you think you know what's going to happen as a new business owner, you've lost your mind, because you really don't. You need to be, I would just say, as flexible as possible. In the beginning, you know, I knew what I did well, but I was a lot more open to taking on things that would just generate revenue and keep me sustained in business early on. Now, I knew where I was headed, but I wanted to make sure that I was going to survive. And that is probably the thing I would say in the first year or two. Now, I left knowing I had a good group of clients. I knew clients I wanted to go get, but I wanted to make sure that I was going to get past that, as you've mentioned, that period of time and where a lot of businesses fail. You really have to be able to do what it is to survive during that period.
So I'm going to ask you a question I'm curious to is you know, knowing that you have a robust law firm, that you're a servant in the community and a volunteer, you do a lot of community sort of work. You're a father, you've got three young children. How do you stay motivated and energized, and you know, how do you keep hold all that together?
Well, let's start with the three young children. They really do keep you young, and they keep you grounded. I mean, so just when you've had a bad day and you come home and they come running down the hall to you, that's cool. That is,
yes,
a cool deal.
Yes.
The other thing is when you've had something happen at work and you come home and the biggest thing on their mind is they stubbed their toe that day or they had a bad day at school, you start to realize what's really important. The other thing I would say, and we've talked a little bit about this before the show, is that I'm big on work-life balance. So, and my wife knows this, is that I do my best thinking when I'm running or I'm on a bike. I can just tell you that. If I've got a problem I've got to solve for somebody, if I can go out for an hour run and or I'm trying to figure out what direction is this business going to go, that's my way of unplugging and getting focused on things that I want to have time to focus on. The phone's not ringing, the iPhone isn't buzzing, all of those things that we deal with in today's world that is so fast-paced. Getting yourself away in a way that you can really refresh your mind and have time to think is critical, especially in today's world.
And you do that in a big way. You're a triathlon guy.
I've done triathlon since, I guess, for the last 15, 16 years. I've done three Ironmans in Germany and in Arizona, as well as Texas here. And I mentioned earlier when we were getting ready for the show, our firm very proudly was very instrumental in bringing Ironman Texas to the Woodlands. Those events, in fact, if you pick up our newsletter this year and this quarter, for those listening, you can get it on our website, and we'll have that later on. My article about in that newsletter is about the value of sport in your community, and the value that having people who want to get out and recreate from a health perspective, from a mental health perspective, from a community perspective, all the things that come with sport that aren't economic, that are just just build a community, how important that is.
Is your best thinking during the triathlon, during the swim, the bike, or the run?
It's hard for me to think during the swim because I'm trying to survive. I will say I do not think very well when I'm swimming, but I would say on the run for sure that's where my best thinking is. You have a lot of time to think. You do. It's a very introspective thing. I don't listen to music that often because I think it helps me to just hear nature, hear birds, hear, you know, what's going on out there.
I love that. And you touched on vision that, and we certainly know George Mitchell had the vision for the community here. Let me ask you this, any business books or any particular, books throughout that you've read throughout your career that really stand out or anything you're reading now that you would recommend?
What I would say this is that I'm not a big self-help business development book reader. I've read, Stephen Covey books were big when I was at Shell, and that was one of the things they used. And I did so much reading. I do so much reading every day. Reading is not my
recreation. You like to get away from that.
But I will tell you what I do like to do, and that is I like to listen to diverse, positions on everything that's going on in the world, because you can learn a lot from knowing what it is someone you have an opposite thinking about, what they have to say about things. And I think it's one of the things in this world today that we don't do very well, and that is listen to someone who may not be coming at something from the same direction you are, from the same background you are. And so if you talk about what do I do to try to refresh myself is take the time to think about what is this person thinking on this issue that I'm completely opposite on, and why is it that they have that approach? Maybe they can convince me, or maybe I can convince them to move a little bit my direction for the better good of society and the community.
You know, if you mentioned Stephen Covey's book, and then what you just said there, I would summarize it by one of Stephen Covey's comments, which was seek first to understand and then to be understood. And I think most people, if they look back and said, if you could just get decent at some of the things in that book, that would be all that you ever, needed for life, because it's a timeless classic. And so, and I know that in your profession that you're really, knee deep in contracts and reading, all day long. And not my, with that, Tom, did you have one last question? Because my producer, she's giving me like stink eye to wrap the show up.
No, we'd need another hour for me to ask
all right,
question.
All right,
so.
Brett, thank you so much for coming onto the Shrimp Tank podcast. And Tom, thank you for being here as our co-host. Thank you for the Chamber of Commerce for hosting us here, and Sam Houston State University for their work with the Entrepreneurship Degree Program. We are delighted to have you as a guest. You're going to be able to download a complete replay of Brett's show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. You'll be able to get it on iTunes. One last thing, Brett, if someone wanted to get in touch with you or one of your attorneys, your firm, what's the best way to get in contact?
Well, we're really easy to find. Our website is thestrongfirm.com. Phone number is 281-367-1222. You can just Google The Strong Firm in the Woodlands and you'll find us.
So can I Google you or just call you and, 2 in the morning, I'm in jail,
Believe it or not, I do get a lot of those calls. I don't generally handle them, but I do have some close friends I have done that with. I shouldn't say close friends I've had to do that with, but I guess that is the truth.
Thank you so much for being on our show. We will see you here live next week on The Shrimp Tank. Not a thought of giving in. Welcome to the Shrimp Tank. Doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This just what I do and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, but homie keep going. You know the saying, you gon' reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016. Like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general, from the front I'm a leader. The charge like a federal fell on my lap, never going hard as ever. The results match the effort. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.